Let's have the Judiciary Committee come to order. It is 1:33 on the afternoon of Monday, April the 4th, 2011. We have a full committee here. Senator McGuire is here, Senator Pascban, myself, Senator French, Vice Chair Willikowski, and Senator Coghill. We have several matters to come before the committee today, including a parole board nominee, Ms. Pacenti. We have SB 78, liquor license holder liability. We have HB 116 to correct the spelling of lorazepam and oxymorphone. And SB 30, it's back to us now for a little more work on return to seized property. Let's begin with the parole board nominee. Is it Susan or Suzanne Pacenti?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. Just state your name and affiliation, if any, for the record, and then tell us about your interest in serving on the parole board.
My name is Sarah Pacenti, and I guess affiliation would be Republican. I have been, up until just recently, I've been a parole officer for the state of Alaska for the past 11 years. I was born and raised in Fairbanks. I went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks here and received a bachelor's degree in justice and a bachelor's degree in social work, and then became a parole officer. And then through different life stuff, decided to kind of cut back on work, and then but I've always been interested in the parole board. I've worked with the parole board for the past 11 years while being a parole officer, and that's kind of how my interest in becoming a parole board member kind of came about.
Very good. Thank you, Sarah. I'm sorry I had your name wrong in the first place, but we've got it right now. Sarah, so you've attended parole board hearings as a probation officer. Have you attended parole board hearings now in your capacity as a member?
Only to observe hearings. I haven't chaired a hearing on.
And you were a probation officer for how many years?
11 years.
11, okay. And all in the Fairbanks area?
Yes, yes. I was at the field office and for 8 years, and I primarily specialized in supervising sex offenders for that 8 years. And then I switched over to institutions for the last 3 years and was a probation officer.
And when you appear in front of the parole board with a as a probation officer, do you make recommendations both for and against the granting of parole, or do you just provide information and let them decide?
No, for both on the field side and the institution side, we make recommendations. In the field side, going in front of the parole board would primarily be for violations for people that we supervised who had violated parole, and then we would make recommendations in terms of, you know, either release or remain incarcerated, treatment, halfway house, sometimes a whole combination of that, and then as an institutional parole officer, that is where we would write up reports and make recommendations on whether someone should be granted discretionary parole so that they would be out, you know, even earlier than their release date.
Sure. One thing I'm particularly happy to see that you have a lot of experience in is working with sex offenders. It's been a constant concern of the members of this committee, our horrific sex offense rates here in Alaska, and I think having someone on the parole board that has some insights into their behavior, some of their ways of minimization and grooming and so forth are all very good. It's a good place to have that skill set.
Yes, and I, in doing the sex offender unit in the Fairbanks office, I would help co-facilitate the treatment groups. I went to numerous trainings and information out of state. I worked a lot with the Colorado unit when we started implementing the polygraphs and doing a lot of those wraparound services in terms of the treatment provider, the polygraphers, getting the community more involved, doing the internet searches, you know, just kind of making sure every area of their lives were kind of being watched over. So I was pretty into all of that when we started implementing a lot of some of that new sex offender policy stuff.
Yeah, the containment model, Senator McGuire was a very early proponent of that here in the legislature, spent a lot of time educating the rest of us about its benefits, and she's here on the committee. Let me see if there's questions for you from anyone here. Looks like no. Looks like we appreciate you coming forward, appreciate your service, and with that, let's solicit a motion. Senator Wilikowski.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we forward the name of Sarah Pawlenty onto the full body for consideration.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the nomination will be forwarded. Congratulations, Ms. Pawlenty. Your name will be voted on this Friday by in a joint session of the legislature.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
And while we're on the topic of moving names out, I think Senator Cockey wanted to have a few moments when he gets done signing the paper to discuss the last name we sent out. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I feel like I failed miserably the last time. We voted out Don Hayes. The whole committee voted a no recommendation, and I was a yes recommendation. So when the motion went forward, I was in my mind thinking individual recommendations. When you had actually made the motion, the committee recommendation was a no vote. And I just wanted to apologize to the committee for not catching that. So I removed my objection based on I was thinking that it was a individual recommendation. So my apologies to you and to Mr. Hayes, who I do support. So I kind of messed that up, and I just wanted to put it on the record. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. I don't blame anybody but me. I was sitting here. I guess it was one of those times where the cog wheel just slipped.
No apology necessary. Senator, I know we spoke about it earlier. We kept the motion hanging for some time, I think, and stated it once or twice to make sure it was out there. And so no harm done. Everyone, of course, is free to vote however they want to vote on the floor. With that, let's turn to HB 116. We'll get this massive piece of business out of the way. We have Mr. Luck up here. Welcome to the committee. And you can answer the pressing question, why in the world is this a bill?
For the record, my name is Jerry Luckup, or Assistant Revisor of Statutes for the Alaska State Legislature. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill because the legislature spelled these wrong right from the start in 1982. If it was a mistake in typing or something like that, we could have fixed it. If it was a mistake in the statute books by Mickey or Alexis, we could have fixed that. But this, I went all the way back to the initial materials we received for drafting this, and they were misspelled at that time in the initial request.
So nobody here voted for that?
No, this goes back to 1981, actually, when the bill was initially provided to our office to draft. And so we were going to propose this as part of the regular revisor's bill, but because of the applicability section I had to put in, we usually don't put anything involving applicability sections or anything like that in the regular revisor's bill. So we decided it was best to break this off and address this issue and hopefully do the least amount of damage we can to the criminal law, or express that this was, that the legislature didn't intend to criminalize the possession of something that doesn't exist, and we actually intended these other drugs, which it appears is what the legislature intended back then.
Questions for Mr. Luckupt? I don't see any. We have Douglas Moody on the line from the Public Defender Agency, and I guess I have one question. Mr. Moody, did anybody get prosecuted with these misspellings, or was that grounds for dismissal, or any information you can shed on this?
I don't.
If you put yourself on the record.
This is Douglas Moody, Deputy Public Defender. Mr. Chairman, I don't recall the misspelling being any issue. I think everybody in my office has always assumed lorazepam was a controlled substance. But I couldn't tell the committee with 100% accuracy that no case has ever been dismissed because of the misspelling. I mean, I certainly would have argued it if I'd had a lorazepam case and realized that the statute was misspelled.
Further questions for Mr. Moody? Don't see any. Thank you for taking the time to be online today.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess I'll just ask one more time. Are you absolutely sure they're spelled right now?
Mr. Chairman, they are spelled correctly right now. The oxymorphone was a bit of a problem because the DEA misspells it wrong on their website also. And they spell it actually both ways. And so it took a bit of tracking down to make sure. And that's why it didn't get into the bill until on the House floor when I'd finally done the research to be sure that that is the correct spelling.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on page 4. The applicability section, you're saying that, if I'm reading this correctly, you're applying this to crimes committed before, on, or after the effective date? Is that legal? It seems like it's post facto, doesn't it?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, basically what we're pointing out there, this is what the legislature meant. We're attempting to clarify that this is what the legislature meant when they added this to the statutes in 1982. Both lorazepam and oxymorphone spelled correctly were part of the federal schedules at the time, and we were modeling after the federal schedules. And so by attempting to clarify, we're attempting to avoid calling into question anyone that may have been prosecuted over the years and giving them an argument on by that alone that we are making some change to the law now. By this, we're merely trying to attempt to say this is what the legislature intended then, this is what they intend now, and this is what we intended in the future.
Further questions? Just for my edification, what is oxymorphone? What does it refer to?
It has names like pneumorphan, and opana. It's a semi-synthetic opioid. I believe from my reading up on it, it has less of the euphoric qualities of some of the other opioids. And so I think in the most part what I saw is it's often used intravenously as a pain medication. The lorazepam is Ativan. It's in that same class as all the other PAM drugs, Valium and the rest of those.
Okay. It's like a mood-altering drug.
Yeah, it's basically like Ativan is, for example, on the ambulance here in town, it's used as a chemical restraint also, besides being something to calm people down and relax folks or take the edge off, like Valium normally works, Ativan.
In high enough doses, it's a tranquilizer.
You would think of it as a tranquilizer like Valium. It's just that idea of Valium is to take the edge off or to get people to calm down, relax a little, and so that Ativan's sort of the same thing, same concept.
Further questions for Mr. Luckert? Don't hear or see any. Thank you so much for being here today. Normally we hold bills over, but this one seems about as straightforward as a bill can get. Committee discussion, concern? Senator Lukowski, motion.
Motion. Mr. Chair, I would move that we move House Bill number 116. It says amended, but it's backslash 8.A out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill's moved. Let's take a short at ease with the paperwork. We'll go back on the record and turn now to CS for Senate Bill number 78, and I think we have an amendment coming around from Senator Pascvan. As we left things last week, I had objected to the adoption of the CS. I'm going to remove my objection at this point to put the CS before us, unless there's other objection. I don't see any. And let's turn to Senator Pascvan. We'll call this amendment number one. Want to move it?
Or B1, or what? I think that's what it's idea.
If it's, I'm going to call it number one, backslash.
Perfect.
Right.
Perfect.
Yep.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I do move amendment number one to version B, which is before us.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Tell us what your amendment does.
Mr. Chair, the purpose of this is to limit the liability exposure to either the owner's policy and or the taxicab or limousine company's policy of insurance, not exposing the rest of the cab companies or limousine companies' assets to exposure. But again, as I think that this is not exactly a Good Samaritan type of thing. The cab company or limousine company is being paid, as I understand, just not by the vehicle owner. They're being paid by the program separate from that. So I do support the program. I think it's a great idea, but there's still professional drivers engaged, and I think that the it makes sense that that their insurance coverage should respond if they hurt someone. And so that's the intent of the amendment.
It would basically put the taxicab company's insurance in place when it's driving home, if the owner's insurance was not in place when they're driving the car home. Is that right?
Potentially both policies.
Both policies. And Senator McGuire, this is your bill. Have you had a chance to look at the amendment?
Yeah, through the chair, to the chair. Yes, I have, and I don't know what the implications would be. But at this stage in the process, I'm willing to accept it and just keep moving forward.
Okay.
We're on a limited time crunch here, and I haven't had the opportunity to speak with the cab companies, their insurance agents, to find out what the effect would be on the program, if they would stop running it or not. That would be up to them, obviously. But, at this stage, I'm willing to accept it and move forward.
Very good. If you learn in the future that it jeopardizes the program, I'd certainly like to know about that. I guess I hadn't worked through Senator Pascoe, and I discussed this earlier, and it was I guess I was not aware of the fact they were being paid to drive these cars home, just being paid by Char, I guess, and not by the owner. So they are, you know, doing what they're normally hired to do. So it seemed less likely that they would have an objection to keeping their insurance in place, even though it's not their car. They are professional drivers. Other discussion points on the amendment? I'll remove my objection at this point. If there's no further objection, amendment number one has been adopted. That brings the bill back before us. I thought we had a good, thorough discussion of the bill at the last hearing. Further committee discussion or a motion? Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a good bill. I think it'll help keep drunk drivers off the road. I think it has worked for years. So I would move that we move CS for Senate Bill 78, version B, as amended, with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill is moved.
Great.
We'll take another short ideas. Yep.
Thank you.
Go back on the record now and turn to CS for Senate Bill number 30, which we have a new CS, a proposed CS, a backslash echo if we get a motion to adopt that.
Get this thing out of here.
Mr. Chair.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion, and we have the bill sponsored. And haven't we seen you guys somewhere before?
You're a rearview mirror.
Very good. We do have the CS before us. It's been objected to with the purpose of discussion. Tell us what the new CS does.
Yeah, thanks for accommodating us. 21 March, you all passed this bill out. Subsequent to that, we were contacted again by the Attorney General's office and asked for some change in wording. We felt it did not affect the purpose of the bill. Might have been an improvement. I tried to bargain for a zero fiscal note. No plea bargaining. And so here we are. And the chairman graciously asked the president to return it to committee for this amendment. And here we are. And my assistant, Mr. Kopp, will explain the changes.
Very good. Mr. Kopp, if you'd walk us through the changes, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Charles Kopp, Office of Senator Dyson. The page two of the CS, the current CS for SB and Judiciary, number D, you go to page two of that, on line six, insert a sentence in front of after a hearing.
Hold on, I'm on page two. You mean line 16?
No, line six. Line 6 of page 2.
Backslash D.
Thank
D. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong one. Very good.
E. We're on E.
Page 2, so line 6. C.
Yeah.
Yeah, C, Charlie. Very good. Okay. We're all together.
Okay. So we're inserting in front of the words after a hearing, we're inserting a new sentence that says at the hearing. A party that objects to the return of the property shall state the reason on the record. And then we go right into current wording there in D. Then dropping down to line 11 of the current / D version, we will, we're deleting the words is authorized and inserting the word needs, and then continuing that sentence to say retain possession of the property for evidentiary purposes as authorized in this chapter. Just referring back to the authority of all of 1236, which deals with disposition of evidence.
Okay.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the final amendment is deleting the language in subsection D from line 13 through 18 and inserting the new language. If the court orders the return of the property to the crime victim, the court may impose reasonable conditions on the return. Those conditions may include an order that the crime victim retain and store the property so that the property is available for future court hearings, requiring photographs of the property to be taken, or any other condition the court considers necessary to maintain the evidentiary integrity of the property. And that concludes the changes in the CS.
Very good. And those were suggested to you by the Department of Law?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Questions for the bill sponsor or his staff? I don't see any. Thank you. We do have Ms. Carpinetti here from the Department of Law. Maybe we could have her come forward and walk us through the reasoning for the changes. And welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Annie.
My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. These suggestions were made by us after speaking with the Attorney General designee, or the one that's been appointed so far. He thought, and we agreed with him, that subsection D was a little bit too restrictive in the form that passed out earlier in this committee. So we suggested a redraft to leave more discretion with the court in ordering conditions. I have to say, law enforcement, I mean, we're a little nervous about returning property that is evidence in a criminal case. So we would like to go as slowly and as cautiously as possible because, it's not just the prosecution that needs the evidence, it's the defense that sometimes wants the evidence, and sometimes we think there's no reason not to return it, but then there is from the other side of the aisle. And so we were looking at the bill with putting conditions on it that would make sense for a reasonable prosecution. So, but D seemed a little restrictive, so we redrafted it to leave it up to more to the judge in the individual case, which is why we made this suggestion.
Excellent. Questions from Ms. Carpinetti? Don't see any. Thanks again for being here. We do have a letter that I'm not sure it's at least on the tables supporting the bill from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and we have Doug Moody on the line from the Public Defender Agency to answer any questions. Maybe I'll just ask Mr. Moody if you're still on the line.
Mr. Chair, this is Douglas Moody. I'm still on the line.
Thank you. You have reviewed the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And any objections or suggestions regarding it?
Yes. One suggestion, sort of to echo a point that Ms. Carpinetti made. In C, subsection C sub 2 says the law enforcement agency fails to prove by preponderance of the evidence. Frequently, the law enforcement agency, the Department of Law, and defense counsel are at odds as to whether the evidence should be retained. I think that it shouldn't just be I think you're breeding a problem if the law enforcement agency has the burden to prove for the defense. The defense should be able to make its own case at the hearing. And if they can convince the judge that it's appropriate, then it should be that.
So walk me through that. The way it reads right now is you get to a hearing. The party objecting could very well be the defendant. He thinks it's evidence, maybe exculpatory evidence. The owner wants it back. The defendant wants it kept for the trial. Judge says we can return the property to the victim, if the victim provides satisfactory proof of ownership, so that's easy. You know, theoretically, he's got a title or a receipt or something. And then the law enforcement agency fails to prove by a preponderance of evidence that the agency or another interested party needs to retain possession. And so what are you suggesting?
I think it should be that, Mr. Chair, I think that the change should, or that it should read the law enforcement agency or the defendant in a criminal case fails to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the agency or another that the agency, the defense, or another defendant, or another interested party, that way, Department of Law is not carrying our water. If we can make the case and convince the judge that it's really, you know, essentially at this point, sort of constitutionally required to have the bit of evidence, then the court can do it. If we can't make that burden, then, you know, it's on us. We didn't make the burden, and the evidence gets returned according to whatever conditions the court sets. But it's our need, our burden, I think. It should fall on us.
Right. Questions from the committee about Mr. Moody's suggestion? Response from the Mr. Cop. Yeah, thank you. Bill's sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page one of the CS before you, it does say within 10 days after receipt of request under A of this section and following reasonable notice to the prosecution, defense, and other interested parties, the agency shall request a hearing before the court to determine if the property shall be released to the crime victim. I guess there's some...
The defense knows about the hearing.
Right. The defense knows the hearing, that they've been given proper notice that the hearing is coming up. The assistant public defender raises a good point that you don't want someone else to carry your water for you. It is, I guess, implicitly understood in the bill that the court would listen to all parties. But if it could be spelled out more in detail, I haven't had a chance to talk with Senator Dyson yet, but I believe it's consistent with the bill to say that the law enforcement agency, the defendant, or another interested party fails to prove by preponderance of the evidence. That would be consistent with the page one of the bill.
Right.
As far as who we're giving notice to.
Let's, I'm wondering whether to take an at ease and have a little work session here, or whether we just keep working it out. And here's what I'm concerned about. It when Mr. Moody suggested putting in or the defense attorney fails to prove, it seemed, you know, of course the you're there by motion of the law enforcement. No, you're there by motion of the crime victims. You're there because the crime victim says, I want it back. And you all show up, and maybe the DA doesn't care, but the defense does, right?
Right. Of course, the law enforcement agency is the one who is retaining the property.
Oh, sorry. I'm in prosecution.
Right.
Yeah we got to keep our folks straight. They're prosecution, law enforcement agency.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
Certainly you could say that the defense falls into the category of other interested party, but I don't see any harm by listing the defense in that list
in
consistent
that
with
two.
The first project. The first paragraph.
The first paragraph of which, I'm sorry.
On page one.
Well, there...
They're in there right now, prosecution, defense.
There's notice of them under... I mean, the defense, sure. Yeah, there's going to be notice of them. Why don't we take a short at ease? We're back on the record. It's kind of not fair to have these long at eases, but it just helps us think out loud. It's been suggested that on page 2, line 11, that we add both the prosecution and the defense to that list of people who have to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that it should be released, that they fail to prove that the agency needs to retain possession. And For some reason, I'm having a hard time puzzling through what happens if we add prosecution and defendant to that list, meaning that...
Mr. Chairman, also, it may help for purposes of understanding. On line 6, it does say a party that objects. That would refer to anybody at the hearing that objects to return of property shall state the reason on the record. And I think we could infer that that's coming before the court in their decision-making.
Yeah, I almost think you need to redraft, too, to just basically say, and the court has found that in the interest of justice, it's appropriate to release the property. Right, I mean that really takes care of it because everybody's there, and you know it's not as if each person has their own little burden to overcome. That just seems odd to have all three of them doing that. Senator Wilkowski.
Another suggestion would be that you replace the law enforcement agency with the party that objects, so that you put the burden of the preponderance of evidence onto the party that objects.
Right,
I think that's
the party that objects. That makes it clear.
It doesn't matter.
Who it is.
Whoever's objecting.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I agree with that.
The party that objects fails to prove. Right, because all three here, at the hearing, the party that objects, and the party that objects. How about that? Andy Carpinetti, the party that objects?
I hate to make decisions on the fly.
Me too.
Objects to the return of the property.
This is, you're just repeating, on Senator Wilkowski points out that on line 6, you're focusing on the party that objects to the return of the property, whether it's the law enforcement agency, the prosecution, or the defense. They have to state their reason on the record. Everybody's there. And that and we'll say the court can do that as long as the crime victim proves it's his or hers, and the person that objects fails to prove by preponderance of the evidence. That leaves the law enforcement, that keeps non-interested parties from having to do anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about a party that objects? Because suppose there are two parties.
Okay. Yeah, a party that objects.
And a party, okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. I conceptually read it if you wanted to pass that out.
Yeah. It still goes to finance, right? I just don't want them up there saying, what did that stupid Judiciary Committee do?
Yeah.
Set that on the record. Okay.
Be up there to defend you.
And they watch everything we do. Senator Wilkowski.
I'm just still wondering if we want to add, and a court finds that it is in the best interest to return it or something like that, because right now, if the way it reads, if we put a party that objects or if we put the law enforcement agency, they have a burden to prove it. So I guess in theory, if no one comes forward, but the judge still believes that you should be retained for some reason.
Then I think D takes care of that. Then he says you can impose reasonable conditions.
If. It's a big if. Mm-hmm.
Right. If the court orders return.
I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, are we leaving the court the ability here to, let's say a defendant doesn't show up for some reason, they're pro se, and they don't show up for the hearing, but the court, so they haven't met their, they haven't proved by preponderance of the evidence, but the court may still believe it is in the best interest to hold on to that piece of evidence. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, although, frankly, judges aren't supposed to do that, I don't think. I mean, Senator Dyson?
Yeah,
I mean, law enforcement agency is going to be there no matter what, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
and the problem we're trying to solve is victims being victimized twice.
Right.
And this is about property crimes, not human assault crimes and so on. And one of the things that we have heard is that sometimes the prosecutor will want to hang on to the property to force a plea bargain and make it tougher on the
other way around. Mm. I suppose it could happen that way.
Yeah, and so what we want is the victim, to have a reasonable chance to get the property back, and if there's a disagreement on that, the judge decides.
Let's do this. Let's hold it over for one more hearing. That way we can, I think it's going to read on page 2, line 11, it's going to say, a party that objects to the return of the property fails to prove by preponderance of the evidence. And I think that takes care of it. But we'll just get it drafted out. That'll give the Department of Law, which has had some interest in this bill, a chance to look at that and think it over, and Senator Wilkowski can consider the case of the judge whose wisdom trumps that of the parties, which is not uncommon. Let's do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There's nothing else, and so that concludes our work today. We'll get that drafted, Senator Wilkowski, you wanted more time to work on SB 98?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. If there's nothing else to come before the committee,
done.
Thanks for the work session.